Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Daughters of Marburg by Terence D. Williamson, narrated by Krista Lewis. Chapter 1. A Chance Encounter. There is nothing noble in being superior to your fellow man. True nobility is being superior to your former self. Ernest Hemingway. Germany, December 10, 1938. Lily sat discontentedly on the train as she stared out the window watching the world pass by. She was displeased at her father's decision to leave Berlin and wasn't troubled in the slightest that he should be aware of her disapproval. Glancing over at her father, Mr. Karl Sommer, who was sitting across from her and writing intensely in his workbook, she gave him an unappreciative yet hidden scowl. Immediately guilt plagued her for the gesture, and she retreated from her immaturity. Not to mention the fear of her father catching her was enough to quell any further eruptions. If Mr. Sommer had noticed her manifestation of loathing, then there would be little in the way of clemency. Not that he was an unbearably strict man, but when his temper was stirred, he had a certain demeanor that intimidated even the stoutest of men. Lily knew he would never lay a wrathful finger on her, but still, there was a certain warning in his angry glare that hinted at the possibility, and that was enough for Lily. Not to mention that she was dually fortunate that her older sister, Edith, who was also sitting across from Lily, hadn't noticed the disgruntlement. If she had, it was undoubtable that Edith would have immediately informed their father with extreme prejudice. The two sisters were at the calamitous age of adolescence, where they both equally despised each other, while also being the closest of companions. Despite irritable outbreaks and sly remarks, they would often spend hours in happy camaraderie. Lily recognized that this constant change of position of friendship between the girls was a serious strain on their father's mental state. Yet, for the most part, he apathetically bowed out from their arguments. To be fair, both of the girls were approaching adulthood, where Edith was turning 20 in a month's time, and Lily was just shy of 18. The girls were old enough to settle disputes among themselves without his intervention, or so he professed. It was at this moment, however, while they were on the train, that Lily was determined to draw upon her lesser qualities in her stubborn attempt to showcase her disapproval of the move to Marburg. She knew it was infantile to be so disrespectful, but she was beside herself with rage at what she perceived as the destruction of her life. Berlin was the epicenter of high society, and naturally it was where Lily thrived. Not that her birth and rank were of any particular remark, but she relished being close to those who were influential. She had made close friends with women of significance and caught an eye or two from men who could lift their family out of poverty should marriage be arranged. To be fair, their family was the furthest thing from impoverished, but Lily's taste in fine clothing demanded extravagance. Anything less than bottomless coffers was, in Lily's eyes, a serious deficiency. Glancing at Edith again, Lily covertly scrunched her nose in disgust at her sister's poor fashion sense. She was adorned in a burgundy dress which seemed to simply sit on Edith without any proper attention to the gifts of nature her sister was endowed with. Lily supposed it was ordinary for sisters to compare and have certain jealousies of each other when it came to appearances, and she was infuriated with Edith's beauty. Strictly speaking, she wasn't enraged entirely from a sense of envy, although that did exist, but rather from her sister's apparent dismissal of the benefits. Lily went to great lengths to procure interest from men, whereas Edith could gild herself in a boring dress, pay little to no attention to styling her hair, refuse to employ makeup, and still be the most sought-after woman in the room. It was unfair that someone so blessed by nature could be so contemptuous of its gifts. Still, Lily understood that the real, genuine reason that she was so covetous of her sister's looks was the fact that she was an exact imitation of their late mother, with brown hair, light brown eyes, and just a touch of olive skin. Edith was the very manifestation of Eva Zoma. Even though it had been a few years since Mrs. Zoma's tragic passing, Lily still felt its sting. She had been kindred spirits with her mother, and the loss of that connection and intimacy tore at her spirit. It was an odd thing, Lily supposed, that Edith resembled her mother while her character mirrored their father's. Conversely, Lily was identical in appearance to Mr. Zoma, barring gender, of course, while she carried her mother's nature for adventure and excitement. It made her quite sad, if she was to be honest, that she felt so isolated, even when around her remaining family. Lily accepted that Edith and her father were contented with each other's temperaments, but she felt continuously misjudged by their failure to grasp her disposition. "It's difficult not to become self-conscious with you staring at me like that," Edith spoke as she continued to read her book. "I'm not staring," Lily jerked her gaze away, embarrassed that she had been found out. "Fine, deny it if you must." Edith shot a glare at Lily before returning her attention to her novel. "I was just curious what you were reading." Lily cleared her throat as she concealed the truth. "Brave New World," Edith replied, while still reading. "I don't understand how you do that," Lily grumbled. "Do what?" Edith sighed as she looked up. "How can you read that book so openly, even though it was banned? Also, it's unnerving that you can read and have a conversation at the same time." "Well, I'd hate to unnerve you." Edith put the book down beside her, and their father glanced up from his work, briefly, wondering if he should extinguish a fire while it was still just a spark. As usual, he allowed the spat to develop in hopes that they would simply leave him alone. "In answer to your first question," Edith began as she jutted out her jaw with a flare of arrogance, "this book is an education." "An education?" Lily raised an eyebrow. "On what?" "The dangers of giving up what makes us human," Edith retorted condescendingly. "Huxley warns, through his fiction, that there may come a time in the future where governments will use pharmacological methods to strip us of our rights and freedoms. Yet we will be too distracted by the propaganda and brainwashing that we will even begin to love our servitude." "That's ridiculous," Lily scoffed. "Such dark imaginings are unrealistic." "Continuing on your first question," Edith cleared her throat. "While I applaud the Nazis for returning this country to some semblance of self-respect on the world stage, I don't admire their prohibition on certain literature." "To answer your second question," Edith paused as she prepared to deliver a crushing blow, "I can have a conversation and read at the same time because, with you, it requires such little effort." Their father chuckled slightly, but then banished the brief smile and cleared his throat, trying to hide that he took any pleasure at Lily's expense. "Papa!" Lily crossed her arms, requesting his aid in her defense.
"Edith."
Mr. Zoma took Lily's side as he looked over his small glasses in warning that Edith had gone too far. "If you must know, you're not the only one who reads for education." Lily squinted. "Jane Austen novels are not to be used for instruction." Edith scoffed as she offered her sister a look of pity. "They most assuredly are," Lily frowned. "How?" Edith tilted her head, and their father gave a short sigh of annoyance as he tried to focus on his work. "They illustrate the pitfalls of choosing status over affection," Lily defended admirably. "They're a tutelage of the dangers of prejudice and how one must also follow their heart." "I would argue that they are a lack of education," Edith smirked. "They fill your head with nonsense and make you believe that romance is all that matters. It's dreadful and girlish, and you should be ashamed that you are blemishing our sex with such drivel."
It's novels like those which make men believe us to be inferior.
That's not and.
Edith held up a finger to interrupt.
It is novels like those which have made this move to Marburg so appalling for you. All you read about is love and high society, and you've stuffed your head with these useless distractions.
Lily narrowed her gaze as she studied her sister with contempt.
If I were at least afforded with a decent explanation, then maybe I would have been more accepting of this venture. I still have not found satisfactory reasoning behind our abandonment of established friendships and comforts.
I will not discuss this again.
Mr. Zoma set his notepad down and looked at Lily with contained wrath.
I understand.
Lily looked again out the window before continuing sarcastically.
I shall be your dutiful daughter and keep silent.
All right.
Mr. Zoma removed his glasses and placed them in his breast pocket as he leaned back and prepared to begin his monologue.
I shall, once more, explain my position to you.
I am aware of the reasons.
Lily held up a hand to stop her father.
But I don't understand why any of them countered the life we had in Berlin.
This is an important opportunity for my career.
Mr. Zoma looked indignantly at his daughter.
I have the great privilege of entering into a position at the administration offices at the City Hall in Marburg. If I perform admirably, then maybe this will allow me to leverage my position into something better, which would mean more money for a larger house, servants, and it could, possibly, satisfy your endless craving for fine dress.
Edith snickered slightly as she relished in the victory over her sister.
You believe yourself innocent, do you?
Mr. Zoma turned to Edith, who was startled to find herself on the receiving end of his irritation when she perceived the instigator to clearly be Lily.
How have I erred?
Edith looked at her father curiously.
You know how important it is that I focus.
Mr. Zoma tapped the notepad in front of him.
But instead you insist on inciting your sister to trivial arguments which distract me from getting anything accomplished.
Sorry, Papa.
Edith turned away in shame.
What are you working so tirelessly on, anyways?
Lily frowned.
I'm trying to organize everything for our new address.
Mr. Zoma picked up the notepad and retrieved his glasses.
Speaking of which,
Lily bit her lip as she was lost to thought, and Mr. Zoma removed his glasses quickly as he glared at his daughter with impatience.
Don't you find it odd that we're being provided with free lodging?
The house was vacant.
Mr. Zoma shrugged.
They offered me the position at Marburg and advised we could stay at the residence.
A vacant house does sound peculiar.
Edith also looked curiously at her father, and Lily knew that he was hiding something. Mr. Zoma had an odd tell when he was trying to disguise the truth or hide it altogether. A small area on his neck, just below the left side of his jaw, would turn crimson as if he were blushing. He called it his curse, but Lily remembered with a smile, as their mother would relish in its existence.
How long has the house been vacant?
Lily asked.
About a month.
Mr. Zoma returned his glasses as he attempted to flee the line of questioning that would undoubtedly follow.
A month?
Edith leaned forward and glanced at Lily, who understood the implication.
So, this residency was subject to the pogroms, or the Night of Broken Glass, as they're now calling it? In other words, it's a Jewish residency?
Lily squinted.
That's correct.
Mr. Zoma cleared his throat.
You condemned the seizure of property in this manner?
Edith studied her father warily.
You stated it was unethical.
That I did.
Mr. Zama affirmed quietly, before glancing around the train car to make sure that no one was listening too intently.
What changed?
Lily pressed.
Nothing changed.
Mr. Zama paused as he collected his thoughts.
I simply saw an opportunity.
To be unethical?
Edith scoffed.
I am your father.
Mr. Zama turned towards Edith with a severe scowl.
You will show me the respect I deserve. I've looked after the both of you myself for quite some time now on my own. It hasn't been leisurely, to say the least, with two pubescent girls. I responded to the job opportunity, and they offered the residency to me. I thought it would be foolish to turn it down. Lastly, Aryanizing a Jewish property is a great honor, at least in the eyes of the Nazi party. Who knows what will come of our service?
The two girls sat silently, out of respect for their father. It was clear to Lily that his conscience was burdened by guilt, yet she didn't dare broach the subject again for fear of another outburst. Glancing over at Edith, Lily noticed that she was embarrassed and not pleased in the slightest for being addressed in that fashion, especially when she perceived that she had done nothing to warrant the reaction. With a huff, Mr. Zama returned to his work while Edith opened her book again as her cheeks burned crimson. Surprised that she felt even an inkling of concern for her sister, Lily wished she could comfort Edith with the notion that their father's response was undeserved. Mr. Zama was under considerable stress at the moment anyway, and Lily recognized that they had engaged in an unworthy dispute. The truth was that Lily, too, was quite anxious about the move, not only due to her departure from friends and influence, but rather the unease of being somewhere foreign to her. Only on one occasion, in her nearly 18 years of existence, had she ventured outside of Berlin. She and Edith had been sent to a week-long religious youth group meeting in the nearby countryside when she was about 15. While she didn't entirely remember the reason their father had sent the girls on the trip, as he himself wasn't entirely religious, she distinctively recalled the boredom. Not necessarily from the lectures, which, if she were to admit, carried some weight and, surprisingly, she could still recite most of the scripture she learned. She used to find it comforting to whisper the passages, especially at night when she was afraid. But when her mother passed, Lily found it difficult to engage in anything spiritual. Not that she didn't believe in God or a higher power, but rather she deemed the Almighty indifferent to suffering. He had turned a deaf ear to her calls for healing, and Lily felt forsaken. Still, she didn't want to offer these heavier contemplations any further thought than necessary, and instead clung to the provincial pursuits of status and romance. She knew it was a poor habit to drown herself in such frivolities, and it would produce ill fruit, but it was an addiction of sorts. She only prayed that Marburg wouldn't be too heavy of a withdrawal. The boredom she felt during the youth group venture stemmed from those she was surrounded by. While she was typically girlish in many respects, she abhorred the lesser feminine practices which so many of her sex accepted without question. She despised idle gossip or romance without substance, and Lily wasn't entirely certain where she stood in the world. She wasn't as intellectual as Edith, but she wasn't mindless either. It was true that she adored Jane Austen novels, but that was more out of respect for the language. Even when translated into German, the author's sophistication shone through. There was a poeticism in how the words flowed, but she knew that if she argued this point with Edith, it would only be met with mockery. Breaking from her reflections, Lily suddenly became acutely aware of a pair of bright blue eyes staring in their direction from the seat across the aisle. Turning sharply, Lily noticed that the host was an SS soldier, and he was watching Edith intently. He wasn't in uniform, but his sleeve was rolled up, and Lily recognized the blood tattoo on his forearm.
Is there no one who doesn't pay attention to her?
Lily rolled her eyes as she glared at Edith, who was still reading, when, abruptly, Lily realized the potential danger. Edith was reading a banned book
in full view of a soldier who had little in the way of moral misgivings. Clearing her throat, Lily tried to catch Edith's attention, but her sister was engrossed in the novel. In desperation, Lily gave a light but effective kick against Edith's knee.
"Hey, what was that for?"
Edith bent down and rubbed away the pain.
"Lily!"
Mr. Sommer scowled at the outburst. "I know you're angry with your sister, but
I think you should read a different book,"
Lily spoke through gritted teeth. Both Edith and Mr. Sommer appeared to understand her warning as they glanced out the corner of their eyes, wondering who it was nearby that they should be wary of.
"All right," Edith swallowed as she slowly closed the book and set it back into her purse. "Let's see what else I have. Oh, the commentary on Revelations."
"Not that again,"
Mr. Sommer rubbed his eyes.
"It's important,"
Edith shot her father an unappreciative glare.
"It's useless symbolism,"
Mr. Sommer shrugged.
"It's real."
Edith gripped the book with both hands.
"John was in prison when he wrote the book, so he had to use symbols when he was denouncing the Romans. The beast with seven heads and a crown on each head was Rome."
"How is that Rome?"
Mr. Sommer frowned.
"Rome was founded on seven hills. Each hill had a king. Back then it would have been common knowledge."
"Feels like a stretch to me."
"Is that my book?"
Lily asked with a hint of excitement when she noticed that they were approaching a town. Besides, she was more than happy to avert the theological debate. Not that she minded the discussion, but neither Edith nor Mr. Sommer were willing to concede on their positions, and the arguments usually lasted longer than Lily could stomach. Yet the moment that Lily grasped the town fully, she fell into an enchantment. The snow-covered medieval houses appeared untouched by modernity, and she craved the thought of snuggling up by the fireplace with a good book. Then, beyond the houses, Lily's attention was seized by a castle on the hill that overlooked the town. It appeared mysterious and alluring, as though it contained a secret just waiting to be discovered by some young adventuress. The castle invoked a sense of romanticism, and all the poeticism of Jane Austen's novels flooded into her mind as she imagined herself with a tall, handsome officer kissing her against the stone wall.
"Oh, please, let that be my book," Lily begged as she tugged happily on her father's arm.
"I don't think I shall ever understand you."
Mr. Sommer looked at Lily with the greatest perplexity.
"One moment you are near tears at the thought of us coming here, yet now you are all at once in love with the place."
"Forever an enigma, my dear Lily."
Mr. Sommer smiled warmly at her, but then his smile faded as he added,
"I suppose that is your mother in you."
Lily smiled back at the kind compliment that was mixed with the sorrowful memory. Glancing quickly at Edith, Lily caught the hint of envy for the affection their father showed to her. While it was brief, and Edith masterfully buried her true feelings, Lily understood to a degree that her sister was desperate for this sort of attention from their father.
"It is rather beautiful,"
Edith concurred, as she rested her chin on her hand while looking out the window.
"You should have told me what it looked like."
Lily pressed her hands against the glass as she leaned forward and studied every detail. She could imagine knights strolling along the cobblestone streets and fair maidens giggling to themselves as they huddled to discuss the latest gossip.
"I thought maybe you would have researched it at the library."
Mr. Sommer shrugged, and both of the girls chuckled.
"I don't understand what's funny."
Mr. Sommer frowned.
"Lily, your daughter, at the library."
Edith turned towards her father.
"She's not wrong,"
Lily giggled, which her father did not find amusing.
"All right, the station is approaching. Let's make sure we have our stuff ready to go. I want to get settled and then start exploring."
"I think it may be best to organize the house first."
Mr. Sommer looked at his watch.
"Besides, we should be eating dinner shortly anyways."
"No!"
Lily's eyes bulged. You can't do this to me. I'm finally excited about this place.
I'll help you organize while Lily goes out. Edith nodded.
She can't go out alone.
Mr. Sommer shook his head adamantly.
Father, I'm nearly...
A scream erupted from further up the car. Curious, Lily left her seat and stood out in the aisle as she looked in the direction of the scream to see blood battered across one of the windows.
What happened?
Edith asked as she too stood out in the aisle that was now packed with frightened passengers.
I don't know.
Mr. Zoma looked about with wide eyes, wondering if they were in some sort of danger.
Papa!
Lily latched onto her father as the car delved into chaos as further screams echoed when others became aware of the disturbing imagery on the window.
Out of the way!
The SS soldier shouted as he rudely pushed Lily and Edith back into their seats and then rushed towards the front of the car.
Hey!
Lily tried to stand again, but the rest of the passengers were now hustling to inspect the disruption and packing the aisle.
Everyone, calm down!
The SS man who had shoved Lily shouted as he raised his hands in the air for everyone to settle themselves. This, however, did little to deter the madness, and Lily caught a rumor or two floating by of a Jewish attack on the train. She had never heard of Jews attacking a train before and, quite honestly, hadn't seen much retaliation at all in Berlin from the pogroms. She doubted that this was the case, but then again, she had never traveled outside of the capital and was ignorant to the rest of the world. A whistle blared, and Lily noticed that one of the train attendees was now standing on something to elevate himself above the crowd. He was liberally employing the whistle and waving for everyone to pay attention to him. Eventually, the car settled enough for him to elaborate.
Ladies and gentlemen, I can assure you that we are not under attack,
he began, but kept his whistle close by, ready to employ it again should the need arise.
A man stepped in front of the opposing train that was departing the station. Was he pushed?
Someone from the crowd asked.
Did he not see the train?
Another asked.
Was it a suicide?
Still another inquired.
I don't know the why, neither the who, but I know the what. And that should satisfy you for now, until the police conclude their investigation.
The man stepped down.
It's clearly an attack, if the police are already investigating.
A woman spoke in a hushed tone as she returned to her seat. Lily looked at her father and sister, who both seemed slightly shaken, more from the commotion of the event rather than by the actual facts of the matter. Somehow a suicide seemed less distressful than anything Lily was imagining. Still, she couldn't stop thinking about why someone would have done such a terrible thing. Was he troubled? Financial difficulties? Gambling debts? Romantic engagements betrayed or unfulfilled? There were so many factors to consider before going down that road, but still, Lily found herself starved for knowledge as to the who and the why. Should we grab our bags? Lily spoke softly when she noticed that the train had come to a stop and others were disembarking.
Pardon?
Mr. Zoma looked somewhat pale.
The bags.
Lily cleared her throat and pointed to the overhead luggage.
Yes, yes, of course.
Mr. Zoma shook himself free and stood in the aisle to grab their belongings.
How long until the rest arrives?
Edith asked, trying desperately to think about anything else.
The moving company should have everything to our new residence in about a week.
Mr. Zoma spoke quickly in a monotone voice, and it was clear to Lily that he was deeply disturbed.
We will have to live in bareness for a week?
Lily frowned.
Follow me.
Mr. Zoma ignored Lily as he spoke over his shoulder as they exited the train. Stepping off the train, Lily closed her eyes and breathed in the fresh, crisp morning air as the three of them stood on the platform. There was something about Marburg that she was certain of, and despite her initial misgivings, she was eager to begin an adventure.
Flags for the winter relief?
A girl's voice broke Lily's trance, and she looked down to see a younger girl, about 10 years old, selling Nazi flags.
Of course.
Lily dug into her little purse.
I only have enough for one, though. Anything helps,
the girl replied, as she handed Lily the little flag.
You keep it.
Lily smiled back at her. She didn't care much for the insignia, but she knew the winter relief was a charitable cause.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?